Well, happy Thursday. Hope it has been a good week for you thus far, and welcome to Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, and before we get underway, a reminder, you are always invited to be part of Perspectives via phone and email, phone number 850-414-1234, or drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Does not seem possible, as we said during the outset, but it was October of last year that Hurricane Michael, which has since been officially designated as a Category 5 storm, roared ashore in the area of Mexico Beach and the area adjacent to that, as well as the impact point of landfall, is still trying to struggle back to even some semblance of normalcy in the wake of that storm. And you always hear the other kinds of considerations, whether it is the number of businesses that got devastated by the storm, the impact on the military over there with the Air Force base and all of that kind of thing. Certainly the housing stock has been depleted immeasurably. But what is the people impact, especially the younger set who have lived through this storm? And how do you bring them and their families back to some kind of a more normal function if, in fact, they remain in this area? Because many have not. There's been a huge outflow of people from the region because of the lack of jobs and housing and all that kind of thing. So let's take a snapshot, shall we, with some folks who really have been involved in that recovery effort, particularly from the side of getting the children and their families back onto an even keel. So let's welcome our panel here on this Perspectives. We say hi once again to Ellen Pickle-Kavich, director of the Center for the Study and Promotion of Communities, Families, and Children, and kind of our lead hoss in getting this thing organized. Ellen, always good to see you, and thanks for this.
Thank you, Tom. We really appreciate it. Opportunity.
All right. Well, and right next door to you, an old friend, Donna Harper, who I remember covering when you were at the Leon County School District, Ms. Harper, and you would have all those wonderful meetings that we would be out there and grilling you at the tail end to find out, what did you guys really do? You're now with Save the Children, though, so it's a natural kind of connection and continuation, right?
That's correct, Tom, and it's nice to be here. I'm always going to be connected to children one way or another. That's just in my soul.
Well, can't wait to see how this connection works out here with the recovery effort from Hurricane Michael, Donna. We also say hi to Katrina Boone, Director of Field Placement of the FSU College of Social Work. Hey, Katrina.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
And we round up our panel here with Karen Omi, Director of the Institute for Family Violence Studies. And hey, Karen.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
Well, let's start with you. Family violence, how does that all play into the recovery here from Hurricane Michael? We have seen some of the metrics that have come out of there as far as displaced families, the increase in family dysfunction, which always follows a catastrophe of this sort. How bad are things over there right now?
Well, they're bad in housing, they're bad in transportation, they're bad in jobs, and then the families don't have the other kinds of help that they need. So there aren't as many resources for victims of domestic violence. There aren't as many resources for children of abuse. And so there's just a dearth of resources overall. And of course, when you're talking about family violence, you're talking about basically potential catastrophes in families.
And there's also been, I haven't seen the very latest numbers that have come out of there, but things like substance abuse and all that always follow these kinds of things and contribute to the overall problem.
No, I think that's right. So I think that what we see are maladaptive coping mechanisms. So people are trying to cope with what has happened, but they're coping with things like substances or alcohol abuse, and also mental illness that hadn't been addressed before the storm is certainly not getting addressed or not likely to be getting addressed now.
When we talk about mental illness, it is, and some of you folks said this before we even went on the air, the fact that this very is similar to what you see in returning members of the military from deployments where there's been incredible amounts of violence. Who wants to address that? Is this really like PTSD?
Well, it can be, and really research shows, Tom, that in terms of traumatic events like Hurricane Michael or like the Parkland shooting, for example, that you have a third, a third, a third. So a third that really doesn't seem to be impacted at all. One third that seems to be much more resilient but yet impacted, and then a third that really could be diagnosed and classified as PTSD. And in terms of the work that Karen is doing, Karen Omi, she is doing work with college students with a specific program at FSU for more broad-based issues of trauma, so not necessarily specifically to Hurricane Michael. Our partnership, my center's partnership with Save the Children, is related to Hurricane Michael and the mental health needs of children.
Okay, and Donna Harper, that is a beautiful lead-in for you there on Save the Children. And how do you determine, as Ellen just said, that third and third and third, is there one any way to look in advance and say, okay, these are the kids who are really going to be impacted by this. Here are the ones who are just going to skate on through as though nothing happened, and here are the ones that maybe are marginal, but they are going to need some work as well.
Absolutely. The single biggest determinant of young children's response to an unsettling event is, interestingly enough, it's how their primary caregiver reacts. That is the single greatest determinant. And when you're looking at reactions to trauma in children, whether it's the very young toddler or a high schooler, you see children who are having typical and normal responses that you would expect to such an event. Then you would see the next level would be persistent and escalated responses. Bedwetting comes back in young children. High schoolers withdraw and don't want to be with their friends as much. And that might be a typical response, but if it's persistent over time, then the caregivers and folks around them need to start reacting and being more supportive. And then the third level is the severe responses, and those need additional support, professional response, professional support. And it's sometimes hard to recognize when that's necessary, but when it is persistent, when it's severe, then it is time. And this, it's nothing for a family to be ashamed about. It's a natural outcome of a disaster of this magnitude. And it's a very wise thing to say, I recognize that some professional help is going to get us through this and help my child get through this. Because the longer the child is coping with it without assistance, the longer and greater effect it's going to have on them long term.
But as you pointed out, Donna, since this is a more holistic kind of thing, you've got the entire family dynamic that's involved here. It's not just, let's get the kid to a counselor and that'll take care of everything then. So, gosh, Katrina, what do you do? As a social worker, you have to bring in the entire family and get them involved in this process.
Absolutely, Tom. And we find that working with families are the core of really getting in and making impacts. Without that, we don't see the impacts. So what we've been able to do in working with the families that we've done work with this summer is we're working with the children, but of course there's that arm that reaches out to the parents. We're looking at issues around looking at more adaptive coping strategies. How do you deal more effectively with anger? How do you regulate your emotions? And these are some of the very things that we've worked with our kids over this process. And that does dovetail right back into the parents. Having the awareness from both entities is really important, but more so from those caregivers. The caregivers have to be aware in order to pass this information on and some sense of normalcy, if you would, for the children. Oftentimes, children look for places for safety. And I think that they get that from caregivers. And I think the groups that we've been a part of and been able to facilitate has become a safe spot, a safe place for the children. And that's helped them to really kind of grow and realize and become more aware of the coping strategies that they're needing.
And Tom, I just would like to comment both in terms of the FSU Resilience Project as well as the Save the Children work that we're doing, is that I describe it as a public health, mental health strategy, because we are really not pre-screening the children. We are not pre-screening our FSU students to receive this dose of mental health services. So it is like receiving a vaccine for some or in an intervention for others. And so what I like about it is that there is no stigma. Everybody is getting it. And in that process, we're able to have people come out of perhaps their shell and identify some issues that they might have. So I'm really excited to really bring that to North Florida and Karen's work at FSU. But really what I'd like to, you know, have our listeners think about and hear is really in terms of hurricane preparedness, that we should be doing more work in mental health preparing.
That's what I'm thinking, because as we heard last week, we had a piece on our Friday evening Capitol report on this. It's important to make sure you have all your documents when it comes to your banking and your insurance and property and all that kind of thing. But this is also a critical part of that entire preparedness package. Just in case we do get slammed, do we have the resources within our own family and extended families to cope with this? And what happens if we get isolated, as so many folks out in that neck of the woods did? Donna, hold that thought. We're coming up on a break here, and we want to give full opportunity for you to speak about this as well, along with the, shall we say, the resilience of the panhandle, one of the great things about Northwest Florida, the great individual strength that people pride themselves on out there, which can come back to bite you sometimes after a situation like this. That and also your calls at 850-414-1234 on Perspectives. We'll be right back. Talking about resilience in the aftermath of Hurricane Michael, especially for the younger folks who, in many instances, are not as well equipped to deal with these kinds of situations as older folks, although sometimes that isn't true either. Hey, Perspectives is always available for you on WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on radio, hit local programs, and then you got a pull down menu. Perspectives is right there. Click on that, because we archive past shows. We try to have the most recent program posted within 24 hours or so, or when it actually appears on the radio. Ellen Pickle-Kavich, Karen Omi, Katrina Boone, and Donna Harper here with us talking about, again, that recovery from Hurricane Michael. And Donna, back to you here, how this all works in trying to maybe bring in some people who otherwise would say, we don't need no intervention. We do this on our own. We're stronger on that. But in, again, the wake of a storm like Hurricane Michael, a lot of that self-confidence, I'm sure, is at a pretty low ebb right now.
Well, what we've experienced as we've been out there is that we have noticed a great deal of resilience and strength in folks. And just for listeners who I know everyone is familiar with Florida State University, but to introduce Save the Children, we are the national advisor to FEMA, helping them to understand the unique needs of children experiencing disasters. We're on the front lines of every major natural disaster in the United States, and we're the only national response agency focused on meeting the needs unique to children. And that's why we have the programs that we've developed. They are evidence-based programs, and they work with families. Save the Children has programs that work with caregivers, that work with children, that work with parents. And we were talking about the need for parents to be prepared. We have parent prep programs that we offer so that they can recognize the stress in their own children and have some ideas of how to cope and help their children to cope. And we also have, after Hurricane Katrina, the Journey of Hope program that Save the Children developed to help caregivers cope and become more resilient for the caregiver's Journey of Hope. And then we've had wonderful FSU helping us with the children who are involved with caregivers. And I know that Ellen and Katrina have a lot of stories that they can tell you about the Save the Children Journey of Hope program that we are providing in the schools in the Hurricane Michael area to help with just the issues that you've been raising this morning.
That is terrific. Katrina, give us a story or two here of what you've seen.
Absolutely. As Donna has spoken, we've had this really wonderful opportunity to do Journey of Hope over in Panama City this summer. And I had an opportunity to go over and sit in one of the groups. And it was just absolutely amazing. As Donna said, many of these children are a lot more resilient than we think. However, I remember the one young lady who shared her story about how much these groups have meant to her during the course of this summer, because she saw herself as pretty isolated at one point, very, very, very reserved, not really comfortable sharing and thinking, talking about some of the things that she was feeling. And she was able to equate and link that coming into these groups on a regular basis has allowed her to find her voice, allowed her to share her emotions and to learn how to regulate her emotions. So one of the things that this curriculum has afforded our children with is to actually to get in touch and to help them to look at and develop some skills. Otherwise, they would not have probably realized that they needed to do or knew how to formulate. And we've been able to do this through our facilitators, who are our students working with this group of young people, to help them to come to realize how important it is to be okay to talk about the fears, because oftentimes they haven't felt comfortable. And again, this has become a safe place for these children. And this young lady was just really amazing in the way that she was able to share how much she has grown over the course of this group process.
How many students are involved, not only from FSU, but the size of the groups? And do you guys meet just on a weekly basis? Or how does that
work,
Katrina?
We meet weekly, on a weekly basis with these students. And on total, we have about 50 students that we've reached that's been a part of the program, and 4 student facilitators that have actually helped push this information out and to help these young people begin looking at coping skills and strategies.
Wow. But given the extent of the circumstance there, I imagine you'd love to have some more of that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think this partnership between the College of Social Work and Save the Children has been an amazing opportunity again for not just us, but for the folks that's there in Panama City. And we've hit a small percentage, but I think that percentage that we have been able to really reach, we've seen benefits from it.
Ellen Pickle-Kavich, tell us a story.
I don't have any. I'm not on the ground, as you know. That's up to our student facilitators and Katrina, and Sharon Ross Donaldson is also out there in the field. But I would like to say that in the fall, we will be continuing the partnership with Save the Children. We will have more training of FSU master's level students who will be going into Gadsden and Jackson counties. And so those are also counties that are impacted. I know there's been a lot of attention on Panama City, but anybody that's driven west knows that there's many counties in between here and Panama City that have been impacted as well. So we'll be doing Journey of Hope, as you've heard about. We'll also do an art therapy program called the Heart Program. We will also do a Journey of Hope for caregivers. And this next week with the City of Tallahassee and Leon County are doing a preparation rally for summer camp kids. So it's, where you have Leon County, I think, does the Build the Bucket for adults. This is building a go pack for school-age children. So it's elementary-age children. And I think that also helps children to be more in control, to be more aware, and to feel like they're contributing to preparing for an event like a hurricane. So that's coming up on Wednesday.
And Tom, that's very important too, for children to feel in control. We all feel a little better and less stressed when we feel we're in control, and providing these prep rally activities for children so that they can think through, what should I do? How do I prepare? Can I be prepared? And then being given some resources and items to carry with them so that they will be prepared. It helps relieve some of the stress inside them. What if it happens to me again? Oh, now I know what to do, and I have the things that I need. And, you know, you were asking for some stories. I can give you the story of a much younger child, a preschooler. And we were doing the Journey of Hope program with her. And they don't have the words, the capability to talk through their stressors like these middle school students are doing so well with. So helping to give them the words and then working with them through art. And this little girl, we still have, it gives me chills because I can remember what she told her caregiver, the preschool teacher. She says, "I whispered my worries away." She said, "I whispered them to this butterfly that I drew." And then I can, when the butterfly flies away, my worries go away with it. And this is how the very, very young children can cope with their stress and find the words. They may not find the exact words like the older ones do, but they have the imagery. Mm-hmm.
And that's why this planning for mental health and in terms of natural or man-made hazards and disasters is very important. And I want to commend the FSU leadership for looking at its student body in relation to trauma and resilience. And they have sponsored the program of FSU Resilience, which is really getting at that same issue of doing public health, in a sense, for college students. And I'd love Karen to talk about that a little bit, because it's so relevant to what we're talking about, being prepared.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So the Student Resilience Project actually launched on the FSU campus last July, but it's also over in the Panama City campus. And it is all online. It is a very fun, interactive, a little edgy system where students can go in, they can watch videos to learn, as Donna said, some of the language, the terminology about emotions and dealing with emotions. They can learn coping skills. They can listen to some of our fabulous faculty, like Dr. Sally Carrieth, talk about grief and loss. They can listen to professors talk about anxiety and depression and really sort of normalize and destigmatize what students are going through. And it's an incredible universal. So we're not cherry-picking the students to take it. We're offering it to everybody. And so if there are any listeners right now who actually have FSU IDs, so our faculty, our staff, and our alumni, they can get on the program too. It's called strong.fsu.edu. Very easy to remember.
Now, that sounds like, number one, a terrific clinical experience for the students to have some real-world, hands-on kind of interaction in a situation of great need. This is not theoretical. This is real-life stuff here. But at the same time, it sounds like a good grounding for just about any student. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about this, and I won't get a react because it's too early, but the state of Florida, just as of yesterday, now determining that mental health programs of some shape, form, fashion, description are going to be a necessary part here of the public school curriculum. We don't know how that's going to work with all the other things teachers have to do and administrators, but we'll follow that situation as it develops. But this just seems good common sense, Ellen, and maybe this could be even incorporated into a statewide hurricane preparation thing. You have Jared Moskowitz, our Lord High Head Honcho of Emergency Management for the state, saying, have a plan, make sure you have water and food and all those other kinds of things. But also, what are the available of mental health resources for children and families who undergo this sort of thing?
Right. And I appreciate the question. And that's why I think FSU has set appreciated the partnership with Save the Children because they've helped us identify perhaps a gap in our preparation for hurricanes in the state of Florida. And we hope to advocate for mental health for children across the state and using our expertise and knowledge that we've gained. And what we have found, and I don't want to not highlight the fact that FEMA does provide mental health, and they do come in right after a storm, and they provide mental health, and they're very aware and very cognizant that it's very important. But that is, mental health services immediately after the event in a parking lot under a tent, extremely necessary, but it's not really what we need for school-aged children. It has to be school-based, and it has to be a regular weekly, biweekly dosage that they're receiving. So that's what we're so appreciative of the programming that we've learned about through Save the Children, the Journey of Hope, and in the fall, the HEART program, which is the art therapy. So it's much more rigorous than what has been done heretofore in terms of mental health services to people after an event like Hurricane Michael.
Sure. And Donna, how do you incorporate that into, again, the way of the world where that becomes kind of an accepted thing? This is what we do in advance of the need.
Exactly. When we were talking with Bay County, the number of mental health calls that they got for their students in the Bay County schools had jumped to 700 from the time that the hurricane hit until the end of the school year. So how it affects children is a major thing, and we need to enfold that into all of our preparation and make certain that we understand that children react. They're not just little adults. They react differently. The people who are caring for them are undergoing their own stresses. I mean, when you your home is gone, and your children can't go out and play because there's debris everywhere on the ground. It's not safe for them to go out to play. But you've got to meet with insurance adjusters. You've got to find a place for you to stay. You've got to find another job because the place where you worked has closed down. All of these stressors are on the caregivers, and that's who the children are looking to. So we've got to start building in to all of our emergency preparation. How are we going to make certain that the people are resilient, that they know what kinds of reactions to expect from themselves, because those reactions are natural and normal and healthy to feel stressed, understanding that you have all these going on, but to understand that there are coping mechanisms that you can use to funnel that stress in the right direction and to help your family and to strengthen your family and be prepared and to help your children.
Boy, that's a good point, because who cares for the caregivers? Because they're the ones that the kids are going to rely on. And you've seen that, Katrina. Gee.
Absolutely. And they are relying on their parents to actually give them the direction, a sense of ease, a sense of calm. And so to have preparation, I think it would be really great. It's really needed and necessary. One of the things that I think we've also found in working with the children this summer is also we've talked about the need for them to be able to talk about their feelings. We talk about some of the successes that we've seen and some of the issues that have come out of this. And I think back to one of the stories of one of the young boys there in the group who talked about being so angry because of everything that they've lost, you know, their house, their pets, and that was really a stressful for him, you know, not knowing what has happened to his dog. I talked a lot about the anger he was feeling, but the activities and the content that was actually poured into these youth during the group, he actually talked a lot one session about, what do I do? How do I go about moving forward? And they were able to look at what stressors were there? What about the anger? How do I actually start addressing these? So they all brainstormed about how to deal with anger, how to do counting, how to perhaps journal their feelings and emotions. They actually came up with some really actual steps for him to take. And the next week he came back in and talked about utilizing one of those coping strategies. He was so excited about how it worked. And what he had done was, one of the suggestions was, take a walk. And he said, I took a walk and it helped. So being able to see that there's such a need to make sure that coping strategies are there, helping these kids learn how to deal with their emotions and to regulate them really makes an impact. But that also, again, it flows back to the parents, and the parents was actually able to assist with that as well.
Boy, that's good. And and Karen Homey, let's talk right after the break that is rapidly bearing down on us on how maybe we get more of the big folks, the grown-ups involved in all this too, because let's face it, most family violence begins with the grown-ups and not the little ones. We'll talk about that as we continue our discussion of resilience in the aftermath of Hurricane Michael in this area of the world. And we hope we don't go through anything like this in the foreseeable future. But as we realize, anything can happen, and it's always best to be prepared and to have a plan, as they say here in Florida. That mantra has become part of our reality now for the past several dozen years. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU Public Media, 850-414-1234. If you'd like to join the conversation, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Way back after Hurricane Michael, when it comes to families and children and the psychological impact of the storm, with our panel of experts, Ellen Pelkavich, Director, Center for the Study and Promotion of Communities, Family, and Children, Katrina Boone, Director, Field Placement, FSU College of Social Work, Donna Harper from Save the Children, and Karen Omi, Director, Institute for Family Violence Studies. And we left off with you, Karen, there, trying to get more grown-ups involved in the mechanisms that can help not only prevent family violence, but also reduce those stressors that Katrina was talking about a moment ago, to
That's
keep
right.
the family a little bit more cohesive. And, hey, we can't be at each other's throats. We got to work through this together.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And over the last two decades, we've learned a lot about what we call adverse childhood experiences. So this storm, Hurricane Michael, was a trauma for many families. But we also know that families have lots of other traumas. Children experience abuse, neglect. They witness domestic violence. They witness community violence. And we've learned that if those traumas are not resolved, that they can lead to negative adult outcomes, right? Physical health, mental health, behavioral health. So as a community, FSU is working on a lot of fronts on the issue of resolving trauma. But first, it was really important for us all to have that common language. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the Save the Children partnership is we're using the same language as we speak. We're talking about adverse childhood experiences. We're talking about trauma. Now, we know that these kids are going to grow up and they're going to go to college. A lot of them will come to FSU. We already know, and this is not just at FSU, and it doesn't have anything to do with the storm, but we already know that a third to a half of our college students have come to college, come to the university with a diagnosable mental illness. So we know that there are a lot of kids, students, young people who already are struggling. So they've got these issues, and we've got – most of these are mood disorders. So we're talking about anxiety. We're talking about depression. And kids, students need those coping skills. They need to have a place to go where they can learn how to find resources. They can learn that reaching out for resources works. FSU happens to be a very resource-rich campus. And all these things are really important because – FSU realizes we only have these kids for 4 years, but they're going to be in the workforce for the rest, you know, until they're retired for decades. And they're going to be part of families, and they are part of communities. So the work that we do with our children, with our late adolescents, with our students, we know that the brain can heal from trauma. So there's been a lot of work on the in neuroplasticity. So we know that there is a tremendous potential for hope, for healing, but people have to do the work. And so that's what the Student Resilience Project is about. And it really was the upper administration. I mean, FSU has been making some incredible partnerships on these issues. But as far as the Student Resilience Project goes, it's really all the president and the provost who saw this need, who realized what FSU needed for everybody, not just some students, and started this universal prevention program.
And then bringing in Donna, Save the Children, here to augment, facilitate, all that kind of thing.
Exactly. Save the Children understands that when children are young and as they grow and they have different adverse experiences in their lives, it does begin to build up if it's not addressed, and it can have a lasting negative impact. On the other hand, when it is addressed, there is a wonderful outcome that is in front of them. And there are a lot of things that parents can do as well. 80% of emotional recovery of children comes from non-mental health professionals. The mental health professionals are doing the work and the research. They're training folks. They're putting on programs like FSU is putting on to help prepare people. But what parents do and what caregivers do is so important. And we talked a lot about how parents can help and the universities and the schools can help with school-aged children. But we also are working with the Early Learning Coalition of Northwest Florida, and Save the Children is providing a program with them called...
it's in here somewhere.
Shelter from the Storm. It just went right out of my head. Save the Children has a program called Shelter from the Storm, and part of the preparation that we give them is in psychological first aid. I mean, we have mental health first aid, which deals with mental illnesses and help there. But psychological first aid is more with the impact, the emotional impact of situations like this. And parents can help. I mean, there are five suggestions that we can give to parents of the very, very young to help them cope. Because I don't care how young they are, a child who is still in diapers and has no words yet, I mean, if a parent looks at them and looks away, when the parent looks away, the child's facial expressions change. They are in tune to the parent. So what the parents do is so important. But they can get young children moving. They can look for safe places for the children to release their energy. If they can't go outside, find another place for them to release their energy. Find a way for children to help if they're old enough to help. You can do little things. No matter how young the child is, they can do something to help. Encourage empathy, and then laugh and have fun with your children. You can do that with a very youngest child. That laughter and having fun is so healing. So if parents can find that space during their day to do that with their children, that is a very healing thing that the parent can do.
As horrific as Hurricane Michael was, and what we've been talking about as far as the negative impacts of that and all, is this not also, though, an opportunity to break some cycles, some negative ways of doing things, some family dysfunction that otherwise these interventions may not have occurred at all? Ellen?
Absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, the word we've stressed a lot, trauma, but we would like to maybe end on a positive note to this morning and focus on the word resilience. And we do think that that Hurricane Michael, at least for us and as well as FSU Resilience Project, has given us an opportunity to focus on how to assist people and children, young adults, in being resilient and come past this. And to reduce the stigma, I think that's one of the most important thing. And you mentioned that the Department of Education talking about the importance of mental health in schools. I think that's the dam is breaking, where we finally see that there's a willingness in society to make time, make funding available for mental health service, and it's a universal, because a lot of times, Tom, when people think mental health and substance abuse, they think of just the very dramatic, high end clinical medical intervention, and we are really looking at more of a preventive public health model. And we think that the stigma, perhaps the dam is broken.
We hear that all the time because, we must take personal responsibility and it is your fault because you have a character defect and all of that. But in the vast majority of cases, it is because of something that happened a long time ago, something, a family dynamic that has been perpetuated multi-generational. And, this is the way Grandpa handled it when he beat the snot out of all of us, and we just sort of pass it along. And that may not be the best coping mechanism.
Coping skills can be learned, and they're very effective and have a very positive outcome.
And we used to think that resilience was a fixed trait. You either had it or you didn't. And now we know that it can be learned. And you just have to break down that issue of resilience and give it names and words and terms that people understand, like healthy relationships, like believing that good things can happen, having a sense of purpose in your life that leads to you having being resilient, feeling empowered, as Donna said earlier, having that emotional intelligence, as Katrina said, giving kids the words for their emotions so that they can identify and name and then manage their emotions. These are all the components of resilience. So it's easier to look at and it's easier to sort of teach and, as Katrina said, pour into kids when it's in terms that we can all understand.
And it's something that we all see because we have all grown up with some folks as children and now as adults who at least – boy, aren't they lucky how good things always seem to happen to them, and they have this wonderful positive outlook on life, and aren't they lucky? Luck has almost nothing to do with it.
It's the attitude and the way you approach life. You're going to find what you're looking for, as they say. And when, say, the children first begins talking to people about psychological first aid, I mean, folks, a lot of times we see they'll draw back, I can't do that. I'm not in a professional. I said, well, have you ever held the hand of someone, a friend who just needed some support? If a child has fallen, have you helped them get up and comforted them? That's psychological first aid. Psychological first aid is when you are being caring and you're supporting one another. And that supporting is so important for folks who are in a community like has been hit by a disaster, the magnitude of Hurricane Michael, and it's also what we can do each day to help each other.
And it doesn't have to be incredibly complex or overthought. I will always recall, despite the great wisdom and wonderfulness of my dad, I was fortunate beyond measure in having this guy as a father, but I remember our walks. He would take me for walks in the woods. And it might be just half an hour, 45 minutes, but so he and I would go out. We may talk. We may say nothing. We may just look around and enjoy the day. But I will have that in my memory forever. And it was just those few minutes that were so precious and wonderful. So it doesn't have to be something where you need a psychology degree this stuff.
That's right. What you were doing was practicing some mindfulness. You were being present in the moment. You weren't worrying about the past or, you know, thinking about the future. You were just in the moment with your dad. And I think with electronics, with social media, there are a lot of distractions for us where we may have a hard time and may have to really intentionally get into the moment and enjoy and look around and experience, as Donna said, taking a walk. That's a really important part of resilience, is to understand that it's achievable, but you do have to put your phone down, your device down.
carving out that time to have that quality time, so that as that quality time is being developed, in much of what you were talking about, having those memories of your dad, you now have a way to release. You now have a way to move forward. And that's what our children are needing. And that's a lot of what I see this program has done with Save the Children and FSU. It's given this other leg. It's given this other breath. Preparation, prevention, I think, is what really is that key. piece.
Well, this is our snapshot in time right now with, oh my gosh, here we are at the midpoint of July and coming up on the first anniversary here in October. But looking forward, let's just go around the table, starting with you, Karen. Where we go from here, just give us a quick, like, one-minute summary of, from this point on, what next?
Well, for the Resilience Project, we've got a whole new group of students who are coming on campus. And so last year, we really focused on the new students and the freshmen, but the entire campus was exposed to resilience. And I like to think of it as trying to build our own herd immunity on campus as we teach students these skills and we spread this information.
Okay. And Katrina Boone, what is next for you and your bunch?
Next for us is moving into our fall semester and being able to move this program into Gaston County so that we can have more impact and preparation away for our children in that area who was also hit very hard by Michael, to learn how to become resilient, to learn how to develop coping skills, and to learn how to have those healthy relationships and finding that safe place, finding their voice. And so we're really committed to moving this project forward so that we can see more resilience from the children in this area and giving them a place.
Boy, that's a wonderful point, because with all the emphasis, as should be, on Mexico Beach and Panama City and all that, we forget out there around Gretna and Chattahoochee just how badly that area was hit, not to mention Mariana.
Absolutely.
For crying out loud. That's terrific. Donna Harper, Save the Children. What next?
Well, Save the Children believes in developing local partners, and we like to work through local partners, and we're excited to have FSU to be one of our major partners. Early Learning Coalition is another one. We have Girls Incorporated, we have Fiddler's Pace, we have a number of partners. What we like to do is to continue providing training others to put on the programs, programs that Save the Children has developed. And there are programs for children, for caregivers, for parents, for adults. And we also get out into the community and help people in the community. For example, those who open shelters, we have a program for making certain that children are safe in shelters and that there's places for them to be, to play, the toys and things to keep them occupied while they're in the shelters. So what we're going to do is to continue working with our partners, making certain that the programs are available, people are trained, and supporting schools, getting back in. We're providing back-to-school supplies for a lot of the school districts in the Hurricane Michael area, being supportive, because this community knows how to get themselves back on their feet, and we just want to give them a hand doing that.
Terrific. And Ellen Pickelkavich, you get the last word on that.
Well, I am really looking to take this knowledge that we've gained through our partnership with Save the Children and help maybe our policymakers to really look at what we have learned, which is that mental health must be part of the preparation. And we want to make an impact across the state of Florida and not just have it be limited to our area of the state and for a selected number of children, because we just really do believe that we've learned this important program through our partnership with Save the Children, and we think that it is very scalable throughout every community in Florida.
So let's see, we have our water, we have our rations, we have our tank full of gas, and we have our coping skills. We're good
exactly.
to go.
We are good to go. We will be ready.
Ladies, it's been a wonderful conversation. We really appreciate everything that you have done and are continuing to do in the aftermath of this horrific situation, but there is hope, as you have all elucidated, and we appreciate your sharing that with us here too today on Perspectives. Donna Harper, Save the Children. Katrina Boone, Director of Field Placement, FSU College of Social Work. Karen Omi, Director, Institute for Family Violence Studies, and Ellen Pickle-Kavich, Director, Center for the Study and Promotion of Communities, Families, and Children. Thank you all for being on Perspectives today, and all the best to you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox today, and Lido Rawls handling the interfaces. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Hope you can join us again next week at this time. More expert opinion and your viewpoint, too, right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.